What's going on, football fans? It's me, J.R. Clark, back again with another Pound for Pound ATL. Joined, as always, by my two co-hosts, Jonathan Holder and Toby D. Gentlemen, how are y'all doing today?
It's cold. That's how I'm doing. I'm battling the cold, trying to keep it from turning into the flu. That's what I'm doing right now.
Yeah, my wife's doing the same thing. She's sneezing and coughing and all that other good stuff, battling the flu, whatever nastiness is going around. But, yes, it is a it is a cold day, cold, windy.
Very.
Jonathan's over there in the inside with a toboggan and a hoodie on. So if that just tells you.
I sit like this all day long with three computers, or at least two computers running, and my lava lamp right here that's giving off heat, and I feel nice and toasty in my little bubble right here.
Toasty.
Outside the rest of the house, chilly.
MJ says he's dealing with the flu right now, too. It's tough. That sucks. Mm. Willie Doc is praying for everybody's health.
Willie. Thank you, Willie.
Speaking of Willie Doc, I had the pleasure of actually shaking his hand on Sunday. We had that little meetup down at Murph's. Thank you for anybody and everybody that showed up, especially if you showed up to see us. We appreciate that. And like I said, I got to shake Willie's hand, and that was definitely the highlight, because it definitely was not the game. Oh, okay. I guess we just need to go ahead and get into it. Oh, we're going to start with our good friend, Fred Butts.
Fred.
$5. We appreciate you greatly, Fred. There it is.
There it is.
He says, it doesn't matter who the QB is. With Arthur Smith, we're not winning. You can't run the ball the whole game and expect the QB to be good. They have to throw. We're going to get into it. And we ain't got no choice but to get into it. And then the other one was Brandon Tucker. We appreciate you, Brandon.
Brandon.
He says, fire Smith now. Yep. Well,
he wanted to pay $5 so he could yell it at us.
That's right. That's right. I was doing my best not to yell it in the mic, but, it sucks, you know, in a sense. But Alberto, we appreciate you. He says, pound for pound.
Absolutely, Alberto.
He said, I just want to say I'm applauding your time, and content all year. I know how exhausting it has been this season. Keep up the good work. You know what? I ain't even going to lie. It has been. I was not looking forward to. It's really weird. The lead up to the show, after a game like this, there's always like a sense of dread. Of like, God, I don't want to do this. I don't want to sit here and have to talk about this game. But as soon as we hit go live, you know, it's almost like when you don't want to go somewhere, but then you get there and you're like, oh, I'm having a good time.
Yep.
It's kind of that feeling, right?
Yep.
I don't necessarily want to talk about, you know, this horrid game, but maybe it'll be cathartic for me. Get it off my chest and move on to the next one. What's going on, Taz, man? He says, hey, JR and Toby, what's going on, brother?
See how it is? Not even saying anything to me. How it is.
Well, here, Wallace says, what's going on, fellas? You're included.
What's going on, Wallace?
See, there you go.
Probably still talking about you and Toby.
Nah, that's all good. okay. I'm going to give you this one, Huckle. He says, not trolling, but I call it a trap game for the remaining schedule. Smith is over his head as an offensive guru, period. We're going to get into it. We're going to get into it because, as I was telling Toby earlier, I have a blessing and a curse all at the same time. Is very rarely can I just look at something from one angle. You know, I'm not a type of person that gets fixated on one thing that people tend to do. So it's we're gonna get into the whole deal. Willie, we appreciate you greatly.
Yeah, Willie.
Appreciate it, Willie.
He says his baller is Zach Harrison, his father is Smith, Ritter, and Ragone. Honorable mention is Lakeo London. Side eye glance is Fontenot and Blank. He says, good to meet you and the other content creator Sunday. My brain hurts.
Yeah. Oh, man.
I feel you, man.
I feel you. All right. So we're going, we didn't really talk about our ballers and fallers. Again, you can see what the bad taste has put in our mouth. Now I've got ballers and fallers put up, but we're going to do this one a little differently. So I'm going to go ahead and put it up. It's blank right now. Jonathan, who is your baller?
I mean, it's got to be Arthur Smith. Like it has to be Arthur Smith.
Okay, I want to know the reasoning.
Because it's based on something like what I talked about last week. Okay, when we look at this team and we look at the team from last year, last year's team wasn't very good, but that a lot of that could have at the time you could say that was because they just didn't have the talent, uh-huh. right? They didn't have the talent surrounding Mariota, Ritter, anybody. Whatever, right? And especially on the defensive side, just didn't have any talent on the defense at all. Right. But every single game last year, when you saw that team walk out on the field, they looked prepared offensively, defensively. They just didn't get it done. Like, or they just got beat whatever, but they looked prepared.
Right.
Okay, now this year you see that team walk out. That defense, yeah, that defense had that long drive at the end of the game. They gave up the field goal to seal the game. That sucks. But at the end of the day, that defense gave up 9 points.
Yeah.
9 points. No touchdowns, all field goals. Didn't give up anything else the rest of the game. And the offense just could not get out of its own way. You had guys that were, either running the wrong routes. You had guys that were making some mental errors, dropping passes, doing, when Ritter would throw the perfect pass, it'd get dropped. When you'd have guys wide open, he'd miss them. It's just, there's a discombobulation that's going on in the offense that goes to preparedness of the offense. And that's the thing that is probably the number one most surprising thing for me this year, is seeing how unprepared, especially on the offense, we look. So, we don't look like we are serious about putting an NFL offense on the field and doing the things that are necessary to do to win a football game.
So how does that equate to Arthur Smith being a baller?
I apologize.
I was like, all right, how are you going to tie this in? Because I was...
My bad. I got
you got ahead of yourself. That's what you did.
I was dyslexic, a little bit. But that was my faller. That's the reason. That's the reason why.
All right, we'll get to that in a second. I like that. That was a good monologue. Very well articulated. So, who you think the baller is?
Instead,
I got to stop and think. You want me to come back to you?
I'm gonna go with Taequann Graham. Taequann Graham got his first sack in the NFL. Yeah.
He played.
So he played really well. That whole defense, the defensive line, didn't get quite. They got the sacks. I think they got three. Three sacks, and so they got three sacks. But at the end of the day, it still didn't feel like they were getting enough pressure at times. Overall, I agree with Willie Doc. Like Lakeil London is a good one for an honorable mention. But again, I'm going to give it to Taequann Graham for his first NFL sack.
Toby, who's your baller? Baller,
yeah, get it right. The baller goes first. Baller goes second.
I'm agreeing with Willie Doc because Zach Harrison was going to be my baller pick. There was a lot of people worried about that draft pick when we drafted him, but I wasn't worried about him. Watching him in college, he hadn't even came close to the potential. His ceiling is still high, and it's showing. It really showed in this game against Carolina. He was wreaking havoc back there in the backfield mostly all day. He already had the size and the length to be able to accomplish those goals, and he's a prototypical type of guy that Terry Fontenot and guys over there in New Orleans would have drafted in the first place, and he's starting to show up. A lot of this year, not just that game. So, he's definitely my baller. Right. With Willie Doc on that one.
And I'm going to have to agree with you as I'm the one that does the graphics Hey, it's Zach Harrison.
There he is.
But yeah, no, he played himself a really good game. Like, he was showing, he was flashing, he was showing up, he was getting pressure, you know, getting tackles in the backfield, consistently stopping the run. He was in the absence of David Onyemata and Kentavious Street being put on IR and Grady Jarrett being put on IR. Zach Harrison has stepped up quite nicely. So we know that, we know who Jonathan's father is.
Are we sure it wasn't the baller?
Well, I mean, you did have Willie Dock confused. Well, he said, wait. I was confused. I was too. I was very confused. I was like, any minute now, he's going to tie this back in with some kind of sarcastic something or zinger. And there was no zingers. No zingers happened. Nope. All right. So, Toby, who is your faller?
I mean, I hate to do it, man, but I'm going number nine, Desmond Ridder, man. This guy, he's not the guy for the Atlanta Falcons. Nah. You know, he's a stopgap, and he's a short time stopgap. That mistake he made down in the red zone, after he rolls out to the right, well, over to the left, according to how you're looking at the field, right. And he just throws that ball when he didn't even have to do that because he wasn't really initially throwing on the run. He had time to stop there and think about it before he made the throw. And he just throws the ball right into a guy standing right there at the spot where he's throwing to. You can't make decisions like that. And he's been doing that stuff continuously. You know, I go back to the Jaguars game, man, where, you know, after that time, they had him watch film clearly on him. And he continues to make these mistakes where he still hasn't figured out how to fix them yet. I don't know if Dave Ragone is going to be able to help him because I'm giving a side-eye glance to Dave Ragone, you know, because Dave Ragone is not that guy as the offensive coordinator setting the table for Arthur Smith. And really, that's dooming Arthur Smith. Now, he'll probably be the guy who will be the scapegoat after the offseason. So those two guys, Dave Ragone and Desmond Ridder, are both my fallers.
Well, we're on the same wavelength again because that's who I got was Ridder. And I really thought about going back in there and putting a picture of myself as the fallen, getting bamboozled once again, you know, thinking that this year, not that it's going to be the year, but thinking that this year they were going to show improvement. Because as we said in the offseason, when expectations were high, all this stuff, you know, people wanted to anoint Ridder the franchise QB. Also, Jazz, I said, let's just wait and see. There should be marked improvement, you know, based off of what we saw at the end of the four games that he played at the end of last year. You know, we felt like the offense was going to improve. And the offense has done exactly the opposite. Has not improved at all. The defense has improved quite dramatically. Now, there was a point that I think is our buddy Joe Patrick made that I want people to consider, and just, I'm not saying it's an excuse. You just have to put it away as another tidbit of information, another variable, another piece of the puzzle. This offense is really young. Like, you have, you know, Drake London, Kyle Pitts, Desmond Ridder, Bijan Robinson, everybody outside of Cordell Patterson who actually contributes, like, skill-wise, is under the age of 25.
Yep.
And now, this right here is a direct reflection to the coaching staff in the front office. You knew what you were rolling in here with. Mm-hmm. Like, you knew you were rolling in here with your most veteran skilled player being a, you know, a gadget guy in a sense with Cordell Patterson, who's still still relatively new to a full-time running back position. Right. And then outside of him, it's Kyle Pitts, who's coming back from an injury. Mm-hmm. Now you got Drake London, who's going into his second year. What I'm getting at is, like, when you had Julio in this position, you had a Roddy White. to show him the way, you know, and to be that savvy veteran. And Julio, being a freak of nature, benefited from having a savvy veteran. There is no savvy veteran on the offensive side of the ball. Jake Matthews, he's an offensive lineman. Like, he can't, what is he going to speak to the skill guys and the route running? How many routes have we seen? How many times have we seen receivers, whether it's Bijan and a receiver, whether it's tight end and a receiver, like, end up basically running in the exact same area?
Yep.
And then you pan over to Arthur and he's like, you know, like, not, but you can tell he's frustrated. Now you say, oh, well, that's an excuse on, well, that's an excuse for Arthur. I actually don't think it's an excuse for Arthur. You knew this going in. Yeah. You know, well, this was a decision you made, right?
Well, the problem is, look, I can understand when we see it show up in the first 4 weeks of the season. Okay. When you see stuff like that show up in the first 4 weeks of the season, where you have a new, you know, a essentially rookie quarterback as your signal caller, okay, you have a second year wide receiver as your wide receiver one, you got a third year coming off injury tight end, you got a brand new running back, you got all these guys that are new or very young guys. I can understand that early this season, but to see it still, you know, to see him talk about the spacing issues and stuff like that. And then we see it week in and week out, week in and week out. We see it every single week. And it's like, okay, so you understand that you have spacing issues. What are you going to do about it? And that's the problem that we're running into right now, is what are you going to do about it?
Right. I completely get and I completely understand that you – for the most part, you cannot reinvent your offense midseason, because you've got to, if any of y'all have ever listened to coaches talk about repping things, like, you have to put in so many reps and so many hours to get this stuff right. So trying to throw it out wholesale middle of the season is not a winning strategy either. But by now, 3 games left in the season, this stuff should not be popping up. And that is a direct reflection on coaching to me.
Yeah.
And that's the problem that I have there. All right, on to honorable mentions. You said your honorable mentions already. I think both y'all did, right? In the process, or Lael Collins
and
some of those guys. So for me, it came out to Taquan Graham and Lael London. I said Lael Collins. And it's Lael London. Both of those guys paired with Zach Harrison had a great effort in, you know, stopping the run and getting pressure and making it where Bryce had to beat us with his arm. And unfortunately he did. Like, he made enough throws to get him in position. So that is the end of everybody's favorite segment. The ballers and followers, and now with honorable mentions. Yep.
No, go ahead. Go ahead.
I was just going to remove this and go into that. And what you got? What do you want to get into, John? I mean, because I could turn this into a gripe fest, but I don't know, like, how productive that is. So
I guess the first thing that I know that everybody's going to want to talk about is actually this. Who has to go?
Right. What's the answer, right? Like,
so I think there is a possibility that Smith gets fired. I think if Smith gets fired, I think they're going to want to try to keep Nielsen. I've seen some people on Twitter talk about him being the head coach, like, just, bring him in as head coach. Honestly, I think if they're going to go this route, and that's if they even want to stay. But, like, I could see Jerry Gray being hired as the head coach, because he's already the assistant head coach.
Mm-hmm.
But Jerry Gray would be the hire. he keeps Nielsen on. They keep their chemistry because they got something going on there. And then you go out and you find you an OC. And I think that's that would be my preferred method of going about it. But I think as likely a situation is that the guy who has to go is probably going to be Ragone. And then maybe in the offseason, the only way that Arthur Smith keeps his job is if they basically tell him, like, hey, if you either go and find you an OC that you can hand the offense off to, you can give, you can be in on it, obviously. You can give your thoughts. You can give the direction that you want to go. You still have the control of it, but like you need to let this OC do their thing. That might be one of the only ways he keeps his job.
Maybe.
But the scary part is if you lose Arthur Smith, if you fire Arthur Smith, there is a very real possibility that you lose all the defensive coaches as well, potentially, depending on who your head coach is. Mm-hmm. And then you get set back on your defense. So,
Toby, what do you think?
Yeah, let me say this first.
Yeah, go ahead.
You start looking around the NFL, right? And I've looked at the NFC, and they were showing the records. And so far, the teams that are in the playoffs after the season were to end on Sunday.
Right.
And none of them teams are really blowing the doors off, even in the AFC. I mean, one thing you can give it a testament to now is the parity. Now you're seeing the parity in the NFL, right, where you're seeing talent now being spread out amongst all teams now. Okay, this is what you're seeing. But where I think you're going to have a drought at is the coaching. You're not going to have enough coaches to be able to coach some of the talent that you're getting, which thus leads me to this. I don't think you let Arthur Smith go in 2024. You're going to have to hold on to him just a little bit longer. Okay, because the drought that is happening, you're going to get out there and get a coach that's probably not going to be even as good as what you have now. Now, that sounds crazy coming out of my mouth. But you don't want to just go out here, unless it's a Mike Tomlin, and you can figure out how to get him from Pittsburgh without giving up a first-round draft pick like the Broncos gave to the New Orleans Saints to get Sean Payton. Unless a Mike Tomlin falls off the tree to the Atlanta Falcons, you keep Arthur Smith there for one more year to see what happens. I think they continue to infuse talent. Now, I love what Terry Fontenot did and Kyle Smith have done. I think they brought talent in there, which is a testament to why the score was 7-9. Okay, because look at it. Now, even though we didn't have a lot of key pieces, they were missing. They still was able to find a way to coach the guys they had, which is a testament to the talent that you got. Now, there's question marks around the coaching that it still has to be answered. But that still tells you that talent is now there, and they're going to continue to infuse talent into the Atlanta Falcons. But I think you just stick with Arthur Smith, okay? Let the whole coaching staff come back for one more year and see what they can do with talent continuing to be infused into the team. So I don't think anybody should go. That's my honest opinion.
Okay.
In that scenario, if he comes back, I do think Ragone's gone.
Yeah, Ragone. Okay, yeah, I'll take that back. Dave Ragone, yes.
I think Dave Ragone's gone, and then I think you have to bring in an OC and a QB coach.
I think you have to bring in a QB coach, especially if you're going to draft a QB. Depending on where they end up, you could be – right now, you're sitting in the top 10, so you could definitely be in the range of Jaden Daniels or J.J. McCarthy or Bo Nix, depending on what you want to do there, right? If you convince yourself that with more competent QB play, we could get a better team. I want to hit some of these before we get too far off topic and they're no longer relevant. Dirty Bird 07, $5. We appreciate you greatly.
Dirty Bird. Appreciate it, Dirty Bird.
He said, do you think that that Arthur Smith's play calling is worse than Dirk Cutter's?
No.
Not really, in a sense. I know.
Dirk Cutter, like literally all he ever called was like comebacks and go like posts and like like he called it was a very vertical offense. There wasn't a whole lot of like stuff.
I'll say this as far as like, I think it has become an awesome, like a great hot button narrative to just say that Arthur Smith's a bad play caller. It's hard. There are times where I think I wish he'd have done something a little different, but it's hard to tell right now. Cause that 3rd and 7 comes to mind where Bijan fumbles it.
Mm-hmm.
If Bijan doesn't fumble that, you're at 4th and 1 at worst. It was blocked pretty good. Bijan was like well on his way to either getting a first down or getting close. And in the conditions that you were in, it's rainy, it's nasty. You have a questionable QB in bad conditions. You went with a high probability play. At worst, Bijan stopped and it's 4th and 2, 4th and 3, and you punt the ball. Your defense has been playing good all day. You may even get, you know, lucky and get a turnover. At that point, you'd almost cause a few turnovers. So I understand the logic. Okay. That's what I was saying earlier. A lot of times I understand the logic. If these plays work, if Dez stops, sets his feet and sees Drake London, tosses the ball, Drake London catches it, he's in the touchdown. You know? I just think it's become easy, right? So who do I think is better? Right now, you can argue that Smith is, because you could say that he has less talent than Dirk Cutter had. Dirk Cutter had prime Matt Ryan, prime Julio Jones, and was still unable to do much of anything. So, next one up, Brandon Tucker. He says it wasn't fair. He says it wasn't fair to Terry to be hired after the head coach. Fire Smith and let Terry cook. I don't know what you want to call fair or not. Terry signed on to the job, and he's a grown man who wanted to be a GM, understood, took the job fully understanding that this coach had already been hired. So I agree in a sense that, you know, Terry can keep his job. He's done well on his side. He hasn't given out erroneous contracts. He has cleaned up the cap space. He's done decent in drafting so far, depending on how you want to look at it. There are some potentially, you know, questionable picks, you know, depends on who you want to lay that at the feet of, right? So, but yeah, fair. He knew what he was walking into. That's all. That was the point I was making there.
Well, and as far as like when it comes to situations like this, the GM is almost always given, if not one, then two head coaches to like almost like two resets. Right? They get the original, and then they get at least one reset after that, but a lot of times even two. And then if they're still like not, things are not working, or just things get really bad with the drafting, like you draft a bunch of nobodies year in and year out, then that's when that happens. But right now, like, that's not happening. Like, is he drafting like generation, you know, the great players in the league right now? Maybe not. Landman is turning out to be something super crazy good. I'm not even sure if he was drafted. Was he undrafted?
Yeah, he was undrafted.
That was definitely a diamond in the rough. Definitely.
Yeah.
But yeah, like Fontenot's not going anywhere. Even if Arthur Smith gets fired, Fontenot stays on.
Yeah, no. All right. Last one. Then there's some other ones I want to get into.
Hey.
Willie says, short of the Falcons running the table, somehow still making the playoffs and having a respectable playoff showing, Smith can't survive. Well, if you saw a little clip from Arthur Blank, playoffs is not a must for Smith to keep his job. I do think that he has to start showing something that looks like he knows what he's doing, I guess you could say, mm-hmm. especially for mm-hmm. the fans' sake. Because like King 7, wow, we're the only ones saying the coaching isn't bad. Didn't say that. I have strictly said more than once, the flaws are pointing back to coaching. I have said mm-hmm. that, so don't act like I haven't.
Well, you can say that Smith is not doing the right thing, right? You know, like there's a problem with the coaching right now, and not necessarily say, well, it's all because the, or even a part of it is bad play calling. Like the bad play calling part is something that people have just gotten into their heads and they just roll with it as an easy answer. Like with, like you've talked
that's,
about.
That's before. All, that's all I'm trying to say.
Yeah.
Is that it has become the easy button.
Yes.
Like to say that it's absolute bad play calling and bringing in, I know NFL analysts are all over. I know that. I see it. I watch it. I read the stuff. I see what Baldinger has to say. I see what Kurt Warner has to say. Yeah. But I also know, like, flat out, and the vast majority of maybe not talking heads, but other coaches will tell you, unless you are in the room, unless you are hearing the play calling, it's hard to be definitive. What I know is definitive are the things that, like Jonathan said, the team does not look prepared. There are aspects of it that still look at week 15 or whatever we're in, still look discombobulated. That is on the coaches.
Yes.
That is their job, to get them prepared.
Yeah. And so far this year has been the anomaly with that.
Right.
So let me say this. I don't think it's prepared at all. I don't think of any of that. I mean, these coaches get the team prepared. The problem is that Arthur Smith doesn't have a winning formula. Okay. And so when you still haven't figured out how your team wins yet, that's an issue. Being prepared, that doesn't matter to me. Every good coach and great coach in the NFL, they all have winning formulas that they figured out and how to get their team to work. All right. And when they learn that, then they go out and get players to plug and play into what they have figured out their team can do. Arthur Smith hasn't figured that part out. And this is the part that makes me say he's gotten too far in over his head. Now, they try to do too much. And when you're in the NFL, you can't try to be running hundreds of plays every game. You got to know what your team can do and how to call it against certain formations that you see on the defense side of the ball. Because you're going to see some of those same schemes and formations year in and year out. And if you haven't figured out the master plays right now that you can call to make your team do what the team does to be successful, that's a problem. Being prepared, I don't agree with that. Not knowing a team formula on how your team works, that's the part that I have a problem with, because he doesn't pay attention to what gets his team going. And that part is where he's struggling at, to me, not being prepared. I don't see that at all. I just see a team that's struggling with trying to figure out from the head coach what your team does best. It's just like being a manager. That's why a lot of jobs don't want managers working, because what do they want a manager to really do? Go around, see what needs to be done, and get solutions to how to fix the problems. That's what a manager's there to do. That's the same thing a head coach is there to do. Once he figures out what works, he needs to perfect that. And he has to figure that part out. He's still trying to figure it out. And that's a problem that I see.
All right, my question then, because I agree with everything you just said, like straight up. You know, I agree with everything you just said. Like there's something that has nagged at me the whole time, right? And I've been trying to figure out, right, is you have what got him the job here, you know, the 2 years in Tennessee as the OC, as the play caller, going from Mariota to Ryan Tannehill, and having Tannehill then turn into a average QB, okay, when he was a cast off from Miami at that point. Okay, I go back and look. I look at the plays. I look at the output. Somebody up here says, I think it was, hold on, let me get back to it. Come on, where is it to go? Okay, it was Huckle. He says, you know, results on the field don't lie. This guy is basically out coaching himself. Other coaches are just sitting back, knowing that he's bumbling and stumbling. Deputy NFL's Barney Fife. Okay, the results don't lie. All right, if we're going, and I agree, right? Ball don't lie. Okay, results don't lie. You had productive times in Tennessee. You had a balanced, efficient offense in Tennessee. You had, you know, A.J. Brown, who is a good, one of the better receivers in the league, like get 1,300 yards receiving, multiple touchdowns. Same thing with Corey Davis. Corey Davis left Tennessee and Arthur Smith and basically hadn't been seen from again, right?
Yeah.
You know, Nick says Derrick Henry made Smith. Like, I watched
Derrick Henry before Arthur Smith showed up, okay, was like, he was a guy.
More people were asking if he was a bust before,
yes,
you know, the because they were he was splitting time with DeMarco Murray, and you know, they're asking if Tennessee overdrafted him. You know, Smith makes him more of a focal point. Now you get King Henry. He was starting to come on before Smith got, you know, took over. Smith takes over, King Henry, all this other jazz. Now, you felt like he tried to bring that formula here in the past 3 years. Drake London, Kyle Pitts, Bijan Robinson, right? Tyler Algier. There's your running back. There's your two receivers. You know, your two pass catchers. And but what hasn't worked has been the QB. You know, Matt Ryan had his lowest statistical output underneath, you know, underneath Arthur. Mariota was a joke. Ritter has turned into a joke, right? Mm-hmm. So the real question is going to be, all right, you gave him a shell of Matt Ryan, which proved when he went to Indianapolis. You gave him a shell of Matt Ryan and two, you know, subpar QBs. That's what the defender will say. When I say the defender, if you're looking at it as in, okay, why hasn't he succeeded? Right? Now, the other side of that will say, okay, you had a chance to draft Justin Fields over Kyle Pitts. The next year after you went after Deshaun Watson and had that blow up in your face, and you were like, okay, fine, we were going to burn cap anyway. So you go into the – you had four games with Desmond Ridder, who's shown that he is still that same guy. Like, you, we knew it was a gamble that he was going to be, you know, running the season with Ridder. Like, we knew that. That's why I was not going to say that – he was the, you know, the guy. And so, okay, sorry. I'm getting off track here. I'm going down, you know, like I said, getting off track. So the question is, do you think, and I'm asking Toby this, do you think Arthur Smith can turn it around? Because I will make this statement. I said this on Twitter. I hope y'all realize the fastest way to get back into contention is for Arthur Smith to figure it out. And the reason why I say that is because you start over with, I don't care who you name. Now you got to get those guys. Now you got to get players that's going to fit what that guy wants to do. So, Toby, do you think he can turn it around?
Yes, when he gets rid of David Gone, because I told y'all from the jump, when I watch this offense, it's Chicago's offense. It's not Tennessee offense. I've been saying that from the jump. I watch a lot of films, okay? And I know what Tennessee's offense looked like when Arthur Smith was there, and I know what it looks like now. This is not Arthur Smith's offense. Now, you're seeing a few sprinkles in there because Janu Smith is here. Okay, that's why you're seeing some of these explosive plays, but you're seeing guys springing open, being sprung wide open, because he's got a couple of familiar guys that run the offense that he ran in Tennessee. But this is mostly Dave Ragone's offense that came from Chicago. That's why he went out and got Michael Petrie as the running backs coach, who also came from Chicago. That's why they went out and got CP84, who also recently came from Chicago. Are y'all tracking what I'm laying down here? This ain't Tennessee. So when Arthur Smith can get back to that and actually call in plays that worked when he was with Tennessee, then you can see guys like Drake London work and do what stuff like Allen Robinson was doing when he was in Chicago Okay, if they're not doing, if they don't have that going on right now, they don't have a Brown over AJ Brown over here. They went out and got Drake London because he reminds them of what Adam Robinson was doing over there in Chicago. But Drake London's not even doing half of that because they're not calling the offense the way that it needs to be called. If he gonna do that in Chicago, he should have let David Gone call it because he doesn't know what he's doing when it comes to that. Now, when he gets back to who he is, yes, I believe he can turn it around because he's got the pieces to do it. But he has to be careful here because now he's going to have to go in that playbook and see what plays haven't been. This is why I'm telling y'all about the formula. By now, after 3 years with this team, you should know what has been working and tearing out what hasn't. These guys run over 1,000 plays in the offseason, okay? So they should already have known right now what works on the offense and what doesn't work. But if you keep hiding behind Dave Ragone and wanting to eventually use him as a scapegoat, no, he's not going to turn it around. When he gets rid of Dave Ragone and he gets back to who he was in Tennessee, yes, I do believe he can turn that thing around.
That was something I was thinking about. Like, you know, you were talking about, Jonathan, you were talking about earlier about, you know, trying to keep Ryan Nielsen, you know, on like the who has to go. Say let's take a different look at it. Say you're going to cull the offensive side, right? We're going to start over there, but we want to keep what Nielsen has done. Let's make Nielsen the head coach. Okay. If we go that route, or even Jerry Gray, let's make Jerry Gray the head coach. Okay. In that scenario, because that's the one that you brought up, right? If you bring in a good offensive mind, they're gone after a season. A two at most. Because right now, I challenge any of y'all to go look at what people are talking about the Philadelphia Eagles, who, oh, by the way, just lost to Drew Locke in Seattle. Okay? Where they score. I want to read this to you just because I find it comical in a sense. Get it pulled up. I want to read you Jalen Hurts' stats from the game yesterday. All right, Seahawks. And tell me what this tells you. Jalen Hurts, 17 for 31 for 143 yards, no touchdowns, and two interceptions with carrying the ball 13 times, 82 yards for two rushing touchdowns. Don't that sound like a dadgum Atlanta stat line right there?
Yeah.
143 yards passing with no touchdowns and two interceptions. You know?
Yep. They are missing Shane Steichen. Seems
big
like.
Time. They are missing Shane Steichen. They just put Matt Patricia as their defensive play caller. So these problems are not just local on us, right? Even the good teams are having issues this year. Kansas City, you know, comes to mind as well. They got wide receivers dropping balls left, right, and center. Right now, like more than likely by the end of this season, the Patriots are going to be having a new head coach. And you know, that throws in the ring with Carolina, the Raiders, the Chargers, Washington. You can add Washington to the list. So how do you go, like to your point earlier, how do you attract talent? Or like, how do you attract that coaching, you know, talent? Is the idea of a Ryan Nielsen and what he's done with what he's had, hey, he's already in here. He's already like locked in. Is that something that is like attractive to a coach? The only one I could think of is if you're willing to make Joe Brady the head coach. Like if you want to fire Arthur Smith, run, you know, get him out of here, right? Joe Brady has history with Terry Fonda and would probably be open to keeping the defense the way it is.
I mean, I would like if you could figure that part out and be able to keep Ryan Nielsen and keep that the defensive side of the ball like intact, or at least keep it so that the hope would be you keep that continuity so the trajectory keeps going in the right direction that it is now. I saw somebody mention, like, you know, but the defense has been giving up leads and nobody wants to talk about that. Well, I mean, like, we're talking about, like, yeah, they gave up a lead in this game, but they gave up a lead because that offense only scored 7 points against one of the worst teams in the league.
And not just that, it's like you had 3 possessions in the second half, and you turned the ball over on 2 of them. You know, so, and you punted on the other one. Like, yeah, like defense is going to wear out and wear down, especially in a nasty day like that. You know, it's cold and rainy. E-Big says, hell no, to Joe Brady. Like, you want to get a passing game fixed. Then, you know, Chris says, what Brady's doing with James Cook right now. I think James Cook had what? 230-something all-purpose yards yesterday?
Yeah. Let me ask y'all a question.
Yeah.
How many sacks do the Falcons have this year?
Ooh.
29 or 30?
I know they were already, like, surpassing what they had last year for sure. Keep going with your point. I'll get you the number, unless you got it.
What I'm saying is that regardless of what number you're looking at, they've already improved that from the first 2 previous years.
Right.
So they've already improved not only that, but how many points allowed that they've allowed this year as well. So then what more do y'all want? Yeah, okay, they gave up 2 defenses. They gave up 2 offensive touchdowns in the last 2 games. Okay, whoop-de-doo. They don't do that all year. And if your offense can't score enough points where your defense can actually have something they can actually work toward the hole, then what are we talking about here? Your offense has yet to put up 30 points in a season.
Oh, come on with it, Toby.
So let's get there. Let's talk about that. Come on. What is the issue with why this offense cannot put up points? That's what I want to know. Because that's one of the reasons why you brought Arthur Smith here, because they were blowing people out of the water, keeping up in shootouts and everything. We ain't doing that here.
So far, they've got 30 sacks with 3 more games to go.
Yeah. And which is not like super great, like, league wide.
It's great for us.
For us, that's like almost what we've done in the last 2 seasons combined. It feels like
right that part.
here's something. If you want, okay, y'all want to talk about, you know, I brought up the fact that I'm trying not to use, like, play calling as a, you know, blanket statement, right? When you start looking around at certain things, y'all want to guess how many passing touchdowns Jake Browning has in 6 games?
It's going to be feel 10. Real bad when you do that.
It ain't 10. It's not double digits. It's 7. He's got 7. Okay. In 6 games, 7. He is, you know how many rushing touchdowns he's got? Because we always like to bring that up. He's got 2. So 7 thrown, 2 rushing. He's done something that Ridder has never done so far in his game, in his career, NFL career. He's accounted for 3 touchdowns in a game. Right?
Yeah.
Here's another one for you. This will tick you off too, or at least tick me off. It may not tick y'all off. You may be like, oh, JRC, I told you. See, I can find you information that'll support anything you want. Any narrative you want, okay? Here's another one for you. You know how many passing touchdowns in 7 games Tommy DeVito's got?
I'm going to say 8.
Tommy DeVito, I think he was undrafted. I'm pretty sure he was undrafted. He has 8 passing touchdowns. In 7 games, Tommy DeVito. Desmond Ridder's got 10 in 14 games. Yeah, exactly. Willie says, who?
Exactly. I always call him Danny DeVito.
Right, Danny DeVito. But that's the thing, is like, you got guys like Tommy DeVito going on 3-game win streaks. You got Jake Browning going on 3-game win streaks. And you have the Atlanta Falcons with better talent, air quotes here, better talent, can't score 30 and you can't string three wins together. Like, something's got to change.
Like, absolutely.
Bradley Burnett, $2. We appreciate Bradley, you greatly.
Appreciate it, sir.
He says, Ragone has to go and Ritter has to be replaced. I'm going to tell you this. I don't know if he'll get, like, head coaching inquiries this year or not, but I would love for them to bring in Bieniemy and let him run the offense. If you're going to keep Arthur, which I think if you're going to take, if you're going to mandate Arthur Smith, you know, well, you got to go get an OC and give up play call and all that jazz, you might as well just fire him. You might as well just move on.
I mean, it depends. Like, you, okay, by and large, most coaches who do the play calling, whether it's offensive or defensive, they pretty much do their entire tenure. But, I don't understand why a coach who or just anybody like this who is struggling at their current job, doing things the way they feel like is the best way going forward, why is it such a crazy idea to be like, okay, whatever I'm doing right now ain't working. Let me at least try something different. Okay, you can still be super involved in the play calling at any given time. It's not like any of the other coaches out there that are not calling plays, but are being actual head coaches, are they still have the headset. They still, at any given time, can be like, no, I want to run this play right now. Boom. They can and do that. So he can still have that control if he wants it, okay? But at the same time, like, be a head coach, okay? There's very, very, very few that are really good at being both a head coach and a play caller, because there's too many things you got to be able to do as a play caller, and that takes away from you being the head coach. There's too many things for you to be as being a head coach that takes away from being a play caller. And I just feel like at some point you got to let that part go. You got, just like what Toby said earlier, like, you know, the best managers in the world are not the ones that actually fix the problems. The best managers in the world are the ones that hire the right people and get them in position and then let them do their jobs. And then and let them, and when they succeed, that is a reflection of the head of the manager, head coach, whatever, that they're doing a good job. You know, so like
I'll say this.
I don't think it's, I don't know.
If he comes to that conclusion on his own,
yeah,
then I'm down with it, right? If he comes down and says, you know, we get the news that they hire whoever, I don't care. It does, whatever hot name. I don't even care if it's some dude out of college. Doesn't matter. Like, and he says, nope, I'm giving up play calling. That's great. But if it's some kind of mandate, you know, coming down from Arthur Blank and Rich McKay and all that stuff, then there's no, like, no. Like, at that point, just get rid of him, right? Like, you brought him here because of his offense, right? Mm-hmm. But you brought him here because of what you felt like he could do to fix your team, to fix your offense, to mm-hmm. usher in a new era. If you're not willing to let him do that, if you're going to put a leash on him, somebody said that in the comments, if you're going to put a leash on him, let him go. Start over. Let them do it. Because, you know, King's got a point. It says, let's say we keep Smith. We still got a QB issue. Yes.
Yeah, we do.
We still have major positions. That's a problem. That's going to be a hard task to escape and definitely messing with me. I'll tell you this. Quickest way to get fired in the National Football League. Keep messing up the QB thing.
Yep.
Keep messing it up. Right? To me, as much as it pisses me off that we are in the situation we are in right now, as much as it ticks me off, at least you have your answer. And your answer is Ritter's not the guy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Regardless of what you think.
If you're that benching part. Him for the second time in a season, then he's not the guy.
That's what I'm saying. Yeah. Like, regardless of what you think of the coaching staff, you have your answer. So the question is, what are you going to do to fix it? Mm-hmm. Right? Is it, you know, drafting a Jaden Daniels, Michael Penix, Bo Nix, whoever falls to us, right?
I'm going to say right now, I wouldn't want to get Penix. He's a little bit more of a statue.
A little bit.
Yeah. So I would go with Daniels or Nix or even J.J. McCarthy.
So the question is, you know, what do you do there, right? Because you draft, say you draft a guy. You draft a, I don't care. You name whoever it is, right? Even if you do something crazy and you trade him to get Caleb Williams, right? Which I think would be a huge mistake. But that's me, and that's because just like a lot of y'all don't trust what Arthur Smith's doing, I don't trust what Lincoln Riley's doing as far as getting a QB ready for the league. Okay? So let's say you trade up and, you know, you get whoever it is you want. Name your QB, I don't care. As a fan base, are y'all willing to let him actually learn? Or are you going to expect him to hit the ground running? Because the chances of a QB pulling a CJ Stroud is hardly ever happens. Hence the reason why they're making a big deal about CJ Stroud.
Yep. I mean, you got Young in Carolina, guy goes number one overall, has not looked all that. He didn't look all that great Sunday.
No, like there was lollipop passes that should have, like, in my opinion, when he let him go, I was like, okay, that's going to get picked off. Oh no, great, no, there's some whoever he's thrown to standing wide open, but like that's whatever, right? Like he made the right decisions, but
go ahead, sorry.
No, I'm just like. Are we willing to say, y'all do realize this is the part I keep thinking about. Like, you clean house, completely and utterly, you know, clean house. Now you starting over wholesale on the roster. You know what I'm saying? And you get, like, are you willing to give them another 3 years? Like,
well, I think the difference would be you spend a first, especially a high first round. I mean, we'll see where we end up at the end of the season, but let's just, I think the best possible scenario for if you're looking at drafting a QB and having options, or, you know, whether that's a trade up or whatever, I think the highest we could probably pick, I think I read somewhere, was probably going to be around in the fives, like five, six.
That if everybody wins out and we lose out, theoretically we could get as high as two. Okay. But the chances of the teams ahead of us, like, completely losing out or completely winning out, you know, is pretty slim. So, yeah.
But I would say if that were to happen, I don't even know where I was going with it now. My thought just completely left me. Just whew. Like I if you're spending that kind of, that's what I was getting at. If you're going to spend that kind of capital on it, yes, then people will be more patient. I mean, that's like you could have the number one guy come in next year, perform slightly better, but not like outrageously better than Ritter for a full year. And they would not get nearly the hate that now would you get people complaining about it, being like, oh, this isn't the guy, let's draft another quarterback next year. Yeah, you'd get some of those people, but the realistic people out there are going to be like, okay, he had a bad year, let's see if he can learn from it. But that's the problem, is they're only going to do that if it's a top round, you know, top for, you know, first round draft pick. If it's a guy that showed a lot of crazy athletic plays in college, they'll give the leeway to those guys. A guy like Ritter, who like had to work his way. And I'm not, this is not defending Ritter. He has not played well at all this year. Okay. He's had a couple of games where he's looked competent. After that, everything else has been like either it's a real learning experience or it was just plain bad. Okay. So I'm not trying to sit here and defend him, but Ritter was a guy who was not a flashy guy. He didn't do the flashy plays in college. He worked his way into the, to becoming the starter. And then once he got there, he didn't let it go, but he wasn't a flashy guy. He worked hard to get Cincinnati to where they were when he left. And he did a lot of good things for that school. So that's a guy that, he then goes in the third round. People are not going to be patient with him. That's just the reality of the situation. They're going to be like, well, we only spent a third round pick on him. We're not paying him a lot of money. So let's, we can just move on from him. It's no big deal. And, you know, because of that, now we potentially have a higher pick. And of course people are going to be like, let's go get a better guy. And I do think there are better guys. I do think there are like Jaden Daniels outside of Drake May. Jaden Daniels is the guy that I would want. Like that's who I think is, you know, outside of Drake May is going to be the 1A to Drake May's one. I think he's the other best quarterback in the draft.
Mm-hmm.
Personally.
Yeah, no, I agree. Sorry. I'm sitting here like just trying to do a little bit better job of also like interacting with chat since we don't have as much time. Let's see.
The fact that we're even talking about this again is frustrating to me.
Come on, but, with it, Toby.
I mean, I'll say this. Look, the Falcons are my team.
All day?
All day, all night. I mean, like, look, whatever they do at this point.
I ain't finna burn any of these hats. Yeah. You know what I'm saying? Like, I ain't finna get – like, I made a statement on Twitter, and I'm going to hold to it. Until I see some level of consistency, they ain't going to get no more of my money.
Yeah.
Like, but that don't mean – I'm suddenly going to go start rooting for some other team. That ain't going to happen.
Yeah.
Like, it's red and black, man.
Yeah.
You know, this is my team. The frustration is because we want them to succeed. We want them to do better. Right?
Absolutely.
We want them to – we want to have – look, right now, even with everything that's going on, I know it ain't going to happen, but, man, I want them to win out. That's like I was talking to a guy today at work who we were talking about it. And I said, look, let me put it to you like this. Even if you tell me that no matter what happens, you're still going to start over, I don't care. I still would much rather win out.
Yeah.
Because if you win out, that's a better chance of getting people to come here and play, getting other coaches to come here and coach. Like, it's as simple as that. Like, name whoever, like, keep everybody right now. The hot name is Ben Johnson.
Yep.
Like, what about this has Ben Johnson excited? Do you see what I'm saying? Like, not that, you know, you got Kyle Pitts, you got Drake London, you got, but you don't have a QB. So whoever's coming in here knows that whatever move they make at QB, which would probably be drafting one, you're tied to that QB for the most part. Unless he can play well enough to, you know, get a contract. Like, my one like breath of fresh air is the fact that right now, just like you were talking about earlier, Jonathan, right now we are not financially tied to Ritter with draft capital or a gigantic contract. This ain't the New York Jets who just signed or Giants who just signed
Daniel Jones.
Thank you. I was like, man, I am blanking on his name. Like, we didn't just sign him to a big contract.
Yep.
This isn't the Dallas Cowboys who are staring at whether they're going to actually extend Prescott or not. This isn't, you know, Arizona with Kyler Murray. And whether they want to, this isn't Chicago with Justin Fields. I got the number one overall pick with Caleb Williams and Drake May staring at me. Yeah. And, you know, and you got the up and down of Justin Fields. You know, so with that being said, whoever comes in, if you do, because I honestly think that I think there's a higher chance that Smith's gone than he's here again. For a lot of reasons. So a lot of like what the, you know, what Arthur Blank had to say today, you know,
yeah.
Said we're going to let the season play it out. Last time I heard stuff like that was last year of Mike Smith.
Yeah.
So, and I'm not too confident right now that you're going to be able to beat or go toe-to-toe offensively with Gardner Minshew, Justin Fields, and Derek Carr in their building. You see what I'm saying? Like, it doesn't fill me with confidence. So, if you only win one of those games, you're looking at the same record.
7-10.
If you lose all three of them, which there's a high probability, now you're looking at 6-11.
Yeah.
So.
But now I will say this. I would much rather, you know, and I know there's going to be people who disagree with it. I want them to win all three games. And if that takes us out of the top 15.
I don't care about draft position.
I don't care. I want to win as many. I love the feeling of coming in here and talking to you guys far more on winning weeks than I do on losing weeks. So I want to, you know, come in here and feel happy. And I want to be able to talk about the win and what, you know, the crazy plays that happen. You know, those are the kinds of things that I want to do. I don't want to sit here and talk after a 7-9 loss where it was a slog and there was just a whole lot of nothing all game long. I don't want that. I'm not saying I want him to score 30 points a game, but give me, at least
score 30 points a game.
I mean, I'm not, yes, would I love it if they did? I mean, like, you know, give me a 30-point game occasionally, but give me a minimum 24 points. Like, give me 24 points again. With this defense right now, again, the problem is we're going to say that next year, and then the defense is going to maybe take a step back or whatever.
There's a part of me that that think when we talk about this defense that that thinks that, you know, we were playing some really bad teams this year.
We were. And we couldn't beat them.
Right. And you lost three games to QBs that was their first start of the season.
Mm-hmm.
Kyler Murray, Will Levis, and you made Will Levis look like
that guy Montana. He was Joe Montana that day.
He ain't looked like that since. Mm-hmm. So, yes, I think there's a real, you know, possibility of a step back next year. For those you want, whoever want it, look in the chat. I put that link to the Arthur Blank press conference. He sat down with Jeff Herlinger. I have no clue who that is. Georgia Public Broadcasting. He did an interview with him.
Jeff Hollinger?
Hollinger. Yeah.
He was the play-by-play guy for when we went to the 98 Super Bowl.
Okay. Well, he sat down with that guy. And right now, all we really want is a win. And it sucks that we're sitting here once again making these same statements that all we want to do is win. So who's screaming into the abyss? I kind of know. Who's screaming into the abyss?
All Falcons fans as a group are just screaming into the abyss.
Ghost Pepper says, unless the Falcons completely fall apart in the last three games, are really ugly losses, then I see A. Smith starting next season with the promise of going to get a QB they want by any means. And I can see that. But what do you constitute as completely falling apart? Because to me, losing to three teams that are in the top five can constitute as that. What I mean by that is the top five in draft order. You lost to Arizona, you lost to the Panthers, and you lost to Washington. If you can't beat those teams, how do you contend with the 49ers and the Eagles to get out of the NFC?
You don't. You don't, man.
Right, right.
I mean, it's okay, man. Look, at the end of the day, I'm not disappointed. I mean, I had a team going to the Super Bowl, you know. You know, one could say I might have been smoking when I made that prediction. But, hey, I'm not going to give up on that until all three games are completely lost, because we could still win all three and get in. But anyway, until that happens,
that would be the great
to accept that, accountability for that one just yet.
If somehow the Falcons win these next three games, which also will require, well, not require, because apparently I didn't realize this. Now, granted, we're probably two games back of the last wild card spot now, but like as of the game, like I heard them talking about it in the game, they were like, they were, you know, two games or a game behind the other two teams, and like the Saints and the Bucks. And it was like, and also a game out of the last wild card spot. So I'm like, wait, I didn't even think that was a possibility. So there's always the possibility we could squeak into a wild card spot. If somehow this team gets into the playoffs by the skin of their teeth and then goes on to not even win, just make it to the Super Bowl, I will be the most surprised individual you have ever seen. There is no way in hell that I think that the Falcons have any shot to beat the 49ers. The Eagles, I don't know what they are right now.
Oh, yeah, like, the Eagles are
that team dang. Looks like a mess.
Yeah.
Let's see. Next week you got the Saints play the Rams and the Bucks play Jacksonville. That's a toss up one way or the other.
Yeah.
And then trying to see who they got left. Where's it at? Tampa Bay. The following week, they play each other, the Bucks and the Saints. So obviously there's a loss there. And then week 18, Saints play us, and Tampa Bay plays
Carolina.
Yeah. So. Yeah.
So we would need right now. We need Tampa Bay to lose. You said they're playing the Jaguars this weekend.
Yes. You need both Tampa Bay and the Saints to lose this weekend with us beating the Colts. And then after that, it's just going to be, you know, can Tampa Bay beat New Orleans? You beat New Orleans, and then somehow Carolina beats Tampa Bay.
Mm-hmm. If New Orleans at least loses one game out of the next three, and we go one of the next two games, and we go into the last week, preferably say New Orleans loses next week or this coming weekend, along with Tampa Bay, they go into Tampa Bay, they beat Tampa Bay. So that Tampa Bay has now lost two. They've got the tiebreaker on us right now, head to head and some other stuff, not head to head, but like division and division record and things like that. If we go into that last weekend where essentially we're tied with New Orleans, if we beat New Orleans, then we win the head-to-head against them because we would be tied. And I think that's how we would get into the playoffs.
Oh, yeah. It's going to be ridiculous either way, and it shouldn't be that way. No. $5 from Willie Doc. We appreciate you greatly.
Willie.
He says, what'd you do with it? What?
It's not playing.
Uh-oh. Hold on. I got to get on. Let me see if I can get it to play. Bam!
There you go, Willie.
There it is, Willie. Wow. All right. He says, to clarify, JR, are you saying A. Smith to get a new OC but retain play calling? Also, do you think Heineke gives us a better chance to win?
No, no on both.
Okay. I guess to clarify, ooh, if Arthur Smith is here, if he brings in, I don't know. I would like for him to willingly give up play calling duties. Willingly is my point. Yeah. Because if you're going to forcefully remove it from him, then just let him walk. Or not let him walk, show him the door. But if he doesn't, then I need somebody who is a better table setter. Give me an Eric Bieniemy. And the reason why I say that, he's used to that role with Andy Reid.
Yeah, but is he going to make another lateral move?
Washington's cleaning house at the end of the year.
Yeah.
I highly doubt, I could be wrong, maybe they move him up to head coach. But it's not like Washington has absolutely lit it up to where everybody's talking about Bieniemy. So maybe, you know, somewhere else one more time. I don't know. Or it could be a Wink Martindale situation. Wink's like interviewed a handful of times and he just ain't a guy that anybody wants. So Bienemy may fall into that crowd. And maybe he's just like, all right, fine, whatever. I'll just be an OC. I don't know. But if not, I need somebody who can come in with some different concepts who can set the table better.
Yep.
So,
But I also think if you take the play calling out of Arthur Smith's, like if you take that play calling duties away, what I would think you would see is potentially now he can now focus on making sure that like maybe being able to do a better job of getting the like the spacing issues that we talked about. Like that's been a problem all season long. And is it just because he's spread too thin? Can't go, you know, whatever. But if he's not having to worry about the play calling stuff, he knows what's going on. So he can kind of watch it from on high kind of deal and be like, I don't know. Gotta make sure, you know, whatever. I don't know.
Couldn't tell you. Fred says win and we're in and Ritter is not the problem. I don't know. I don't agree. Look, Kenneth, okay. I get you. Kurt Warner.
I'm not gonna say he's the problem. I'm gonna say he's not the solution.
Right. I get it. You saw the Kurt Warner video and that has you convinced that that Ritter was not the problem. Go watch JT O'Sullivan. Like he highlights every as far as it he does a deeper dive. It's not just a 2-minute video or whatever that video was. That was a couple weeks back. I get it. Everybody's a problem right now.
Yep.
So, but I just, there isn't much that has shown me that Ritter can be the answer. There's not been enough flashes. He is not able to throw enough touchdowns. Like, you know, somebody quickly, and then we're going to start wrapping this thing up because it's getting long-winded.
I'm hungry.
You're hungry?
Oh, okay. Yes, I'm hungry. I got some enchiladas waiting on me.
What? You didn't bring me none.
No, they're all for me.
They're all for you. Except, you see how he's doing this, Toby? You see how he's doing this?
My wife makes unbelievable enchiladas, too.
In Tom Brady's first year, since everybody loves that one, right? Tom Brady's first year, yeah, he threw 12 picks, but he also threw 18 touchdowns.
Yeah.
So, that's my issue is getting the ball into the end zone. I can live with the turnovers if you're putting points on the board. We can fix that stuff, but you're not putting points on the board.
That's why you still put up with Josh Allen. The guy's a turnover machine this year, but like the guy makes spectacular play after spectacular play, and so he produces to if not negate then you know then or if not like would make him irrelevant, he kind of negates him a little bit.
So. I hate to tell you this, Kenneth, but anybody who makes it to the position of head coach in the NFL is an easy, egotistical, maniacal elite.
Yes, everyone.
And they who all think they know it all. That's how you get there.
That's how you get to be a head coach, a CEO, the president. That's all every single one of them.
Yeah, they all think they know it all. That's how they get there. You know, anyway. All right, folks, we appreciate y'all greatly, as always. Yes, it was a somber one. Hopefully we get to talk about a win next week, right?
Absolutely. That's the goal. Yep. Like that's the hope.
All right, folks, follow me on Twitter. I'm at Grim1128. Toby.
TobyD1991.
Jonathan.
At Jonathan M. Holder. Come by say hi.
Hopefully next week it won't be nearly as somber. All right, folks, we appreciate y'all. And as always, Falcons fans, rise up.
Rise up.